is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Andrew Petcash, sports entrepreneur, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads mentorship program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Linzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are jumping on tonight to talk some NBA, although...
Well, some bare bones tonight.
It is a bare bones episode. We're going to rehash some Donovan Mitchell talk after having had a few days to digest the Cavs-Jazz trade. And then there were a couple of small tidbits of news today that we're going to hit on. And then who knows, maybe we'll throw in a mystery topic at the end.
We know what the mystery topic is, but we'll save that for the end for those listeners who have not who didn't listen to us back in the fall, our new NBA listeners, fall last year. But the first news, this is really exciting. Mike says he has 10 seconds of information to share with us. The 76ers today reportedly have added Montrezl Harrell to their team for a two-year $5.2 million deal. Mike, I'm counting your 10 seconds right now. Here you go.
You got the timer going?
No, I'm joking. I'm just messing with you.
So I guess what I would say to the Montrezl Harrell signing is, if you're Philly, you need a backup center, and Harrell for 2 years, $5.2 million seems like a pretty reasonable bet on a guy who's been effective in the regular season, hasn't been that effective in the playoffs, but he's certainly been a guy that's helped teams in the regular season. So I would anticipate that if he stays healthy, he would be able to do the same thing for Philly. Gives you a little insurance behind Joel Embiid, who obviously if he goes down, Philly's season is over anyway. But overall, I guess if I'm the Sixers, I feel like I'm getting a guy who has been productive and probably will continue to be productive for the Sixers this year. But does he move the needle in any significant way?
The answer is no, Mike. No.
The answer is no.
The only way is he moving the needle if he could convince James Harden to eat healthy and actually participate in workouts.
Well, hey, there's that. If he can do that, man, he's really got things going then. Now, I mean, look, Harrell's a guy who's offensively has proven to be pretty good in the league. He was a sixth man of the year back in the 1920 season with the Clippers, when him and Lou Will were teaming up with their two-man game. And since then, I would say that his production has steadily gone down and his value around the league after that playoff, that season of playoffs where he just wasn't very effective and he had a really hard time matching up with bigger guys. I think the league kind of soured on him overall as a player. And so, look, this signing, it is what it is. It helps Philly in the sense of Harrell's a guy who you could put out on the floor for regular season minutes. And if Embiid were to sustain an injury or during the time when he's load managing, now you can throw Harrell in there who's going to be able to get some baskets for you. Not a great defensive player, but he's a guy who, if you got him on your roster as your backup center, it's not going to hurt you, especially at that price tag that they got him for.
Yeah. He's super cheap. So that's the benefit of this whole thing for him. He gets money because there's probably not many teams in the league that were going to pay him. And then not only that, the 76ers, they can lean on him if they absolutely need to. But, I mean, I wouldn't like lean on him too much. He might fall apart, saw it in the playoffs. So, all right. So there's that, Mike. That's our Montrezl Harrell. That was a longer segment than we thought. Look at us go. The next segment, we're going to talk about Patrick Beverley in the house in Los Angeles. He had his introductory press conference today, and he's excited. Well, let me read the quote. He's excited to play, super excited to play with Westbrook. Obviously, like any relationship or any marriage, things we are going to have some tough conversations. That is what comes with winning, but I am excited about those conversations. I'm excited about the practices. So, obviously, Patrick Beverley saying all the right things. I can't wait to see when Russell Westbrook takes a shot that Patrick Beverley doesn't like in an actual game. Because just like LeBron's disgusting face, Patrick Beverley, it might literally be two. LeBron and Patrick Beverley, though different heights, might be staring at Russell Westbrook saying, "What in the heck are you doing right now?" So I'm super excited for that. And you know that Patrick Beverley is going to call him out on it because Patrick Beverley has zero filter. Zero, zero, zero filter. So I'm super excited, just like he's super excited, to see how this unfolds.
Hey, Westbrook tossed him a towel today. Did you see that?
I did not see that video.
Yeah, during the press conference, Beverley was sweaty and Westbrook tossed him a towel. And in response, Beverley said, "Love that, brother. First dime of the year." So I'm not sure that these two are really going to be coexisting in any meaningful way, shape, or form. I think this Lakers situation is, in my mind, prime for an implosion. I just don't think that, sort of like what I talked about with the Nets last year going into it, when you have the personalities of Harden and Kyrie and Durant all on that same team. And despite their talent level, it just doesn't feel like that was going to be a good mix. And clearly it wasn't. And I think this situation, if they can't figure out a way to deal Russ's deal and you end up with LeBron, AD, Westbrook, and Patrick Beverley on this roster when the season opens, that to me seems like a pretty combustible group that things could go very, very wrong very, very quickly. And especially with all the things that we saw this summer with LeBron and him and Westbrook not dapping each other up and talking to each other at Summer League when LeBron was talking to every other person associated with the Lakers and the league. It feels like this situation needs to somehow get resolved. And yet at the same point, why, if you're another NBA team, nobody's lining up to help the Los Angeles Lakers to offload Russell Westbrook's contract. Now, maybe they can release him and just eat that salary, but that doesn't seem likely. But yet at the same time, I think if you bring him back, I think you're just asking for problems because Russ has shown no desire whatsoever to change or adapt his game to what people have been asking him for or what the media has been speculating that he needs to do. Could he become a better off-ball cutter? Could he become a better defender? Could he lean into being more of a distributor and less of a guy that takes shots? And it seems like he just, for whatever reason, isn't willing to buy into that role. And I wouldn't anticipate that that's going to change. And then it just feels like he's a guy who's kind of hanging on to his stardom. And as you said, it feels like Patrick Beverley's probably not going to be a guy who's going to hold his tongue. He might say some things. And look, Patrick Beverley is a good player, and he's been playing the NBA for a long time, but I'm not sure that Russell Westbrook, especially given their history, that Westbrook is going to want to hear Patrick Beverley's opinion about his ability or lack thereof to play basketball. And then you just throw in, what's LeBron going to do? And we know that when things don't go well, that LeBron has a tendency to, I won't say misbehave, but behave in ways that are maybe not conducive to helping the current roster win games, if that makes any sense. So I just think this Lakers thing is going to blow up in their face, especially if Russ is still on the team come November 1st.
Yeah, but we'll just have to see. But more importantly, you mentioned LeBron, Mike.
Yes, what about LeBron?
Well, where was he on Saturday night?
He was at Ohio Stadium.
Watching the Buckeyes with a whole list, a whole group of people. And Jason Tatum was there wearing a Buckeyes. I didn't quite get that one.
Why was Tatum there? Do you have any idea why?
I have no intel on Jason Tatum and his Ohio State Buckeyes fandom.
When I saw that, I was trying to figure out, okay, like who.
I mean, he went to Duke, right?
Yeah, and he's from St. Louis, so I couldn't figure out like what the connection was. I didn't understand why Tatum was there. I mean, again, you want to go to Ohio State Notre Dame football game? Great. I mean, that's probably the best game of the college football weekend, but you have every right to be there. But I just didn't understand. It just didn't make sense because it felt like he was given the same, like, oh, he's here to watch Ohio State.
It was an autographed Ted Ginn Jr. jersey, so I don't know if that's why, because he's like homies with Ted Ginn or something, maybe.
Maybe, I mean, but Ted Ginn's from Glenville, so I'm not sure how that gets him to St. Louis or
wasn't
Boston.
Wasn't Ted Ginn represented by Clutch at one point?
I guess maybe. I don't know that for a fact, but maybe there's some connection there. Anyway, let's put it this way. It didn't leap off the page clearly.
Mike, here's the connection. I got it. 6 degrees of separation. He's friends with Evan Turner, who went to Ohio State because they played on the Celtics for a few years together. So that's how he got into this game. Evan Turner was on the sideline too. That's my guess.
All right. Okay, well, maybe your guess is as good as any, so we'll go with that. Let's run with that theory while we can.
Yeah. So anyways, so more importantly, some pictures were posted today on Bronny's. I can't believe a reporter got a high school player's Instagram page, but here we go. Bronny's Instagram page, him wearing Ohio State gear. Now, he said not committed, but, I mean, it's pretty cool. It would be cool to see him play for Ohio State. I mean, I had heard that Oregon was like his like front runner. I don't know, but I think if Dad
didn't LeBron
had any,
didn't LeBron debunk that though when that came out? I thought LeBron
said stop
speculating about it or something.
Yeah, I mean he possibly could have said that. I did not catch that, but I think if LeBron had his way with it and he had. I think OSU would be a perfect place to send him because LeBron's always been a OSU supporter. So I think LeBron said all the right things as far as I want my kid to go where he wants to go and what gives him the best opportunity. But I can't imagine Ohio State wouldn't give him one of the best opportunities. So I don't know. I don't know how you feel on the situation, or if you have any speculation whatsoever.
I guess I would look at it and say, if you had to guess where he was going to go, you'd probably think he's going to go somewhere in Southern California to stay by the family compound in LA, or he'd come
LeBron's
back
leaving
home
next year. I'm just kidding.
He'd come back. Well, I think LeBron's home base is going to continue to be in LA, even if he ends up and goes and plays somewhere for a year or two or whatever. I think he's pretty well entrenched at this point in Los Angeles, but you could also make the case and see where that the possibility of Bronny coming back and playing at Ohio State seems like if you're just going to pick random places around the country, schools where he might play, certainly Ohio State, you would have to think would be on that short list. As LeBron, who, for the record, did not go to Ohio State, but clearly has shown his support for
I mean, he bought Ohio State. The whole team's shoes and stuff at one point, right?
Right. So, I mean, he's clearly had, and he's been on the sidelines, I think, for football games before, or at least in the stands. And so there's clearly a connection between, he feels a connection to the university. So it wouldn't be that shocking if he steered or influenced Bronny into going to Ohio State as his college choice. But whether or not that actually happens, I have no idea. Obviously, Ohio, if you're Ohio State, you'd be happy to have a guy of that caliber and the attention that it would bring to your program. And then who knows? Is he there for a year? Does he become a great college player? Is he a good college player? Is he a one-and-done player? I think that's the speculation. And clearly then you go back and you tie it to LeBron's ultimate NBA destination when Bronny gets to the league, if he gets to the league, and how that all plays together. So there's a lot of interesting subplots here, but it was just when you saw the picture of Bronny in Ohio State gear, it just made you think, oh yeah, that could make sense. That could be a, it wouldn't be an unlikely landing spot for him. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect landing spot for him. I think it's the perfect place for him to go is Ohio State. And then we'll see LeBron at all the games. He'd be taking a few days off at the Lakers to go watch his kid play. I need to go on a quick vacation.
That's his load management. Every time the Buckeyes are playing, then LeBron takes a night off.
Yeah.
Stranger things have happened.
Yep. All right. So then the last thing we're going to talk about relatively briefly, because I mean, we did a 38 episode last week on it. You go back and check it and listen to our initial reactions to the Donovan Mitchell trade, our third podcast of the night that night. We're going to talk really quickly about we've had some more time to, as Mike says, digest the trade, think about where this lands. I'm pretty much in the same spot I was on Thursday night. I think the Cavs are definitely better. I think the Cavs have a chance to be a – I'm going to probably at this point – this is probably a bad phraseology, but I'm probably going to say be a fake contender, like probably a four seed probably is where they're at. Now, you could give me an argument that they somehow overachieve in the regular season and they creep up to the three seed. I'm not ready to say two because I don't think we're there, but I think three seed's probably their peak for the regular season. But I'm thinking they're going to end in the 4 or 5 seed. I'd like them obviously to get the 4 seed so we get home court, but I think it's going to be fun to watch them play. I'm really, really looking forward to watching them play, and I really wish I would have got those season tickets because now the prices are going up. So that's my take, Mike, right now as I've sifted through things. I mean, once again, we don't have to rehash all the details of the trade, but in theory, if the Cavs are good for the next foreseeable future, those first round picks are going to be in the 20s? I mean, theoretically,
they'll be a lot
right?
less valuable. They're not going to be lottery picks, you wouldn't think.
Yeah.
Over the next, based on the fact that you have these guys locked up, it seems unlikely that any of those picks are going to fall in the lottery unless something goes terribly, terribly wrong, either through injury or just who knows what could happen. But obviously, things can change very, very quickly. But I think looking at it as we sit here today, it certainly seems like they're set up pretty well with four guys who are young and who are under contract and that fit together at least fairly well. And we could talk a little bit more about that we did the other day as well. But I think when you're talking about the ceiling, I think if you look at the Eastern Conference, I think you say Milwaukee and Boston are clearly better than the Cavs at this point, more experienced teams that have gone deeper into the playoffs and just teams that are more seasoned and probably have a guy who's one superstar level ahead of where Donovan Mitchell is as our as our best player. I mean, clearly Giannis is the best player in the league, maybe the second best, depending on how you want to view the league. And then Tatum, depending on how you feel about him, again, he's probably a top 10 to 15 player in the league. I don't think Donovan Mitchell is there, and I don't think Darius probably will ever get to that point, and I don't think that Mobley is not there yet. He may get there sooner than later, but he's not there as we sit here on September 6th. So I think I would put Milwaukee and Boston clearly ahead of the Cavs. And then the next set of teams you're looking at are Philly, the Nets, and Chicago. Miami are probably that next tier. But I think Chicago's below, especially with the news that Lonzo was probably going to be out at the beginning of the season, missed training camp. So that's a big blow to Chicago. And I'm not sure that you're going to get the same.
Would you say that he dropped the ball in his rehab, Mike?
There you go. I would say he did. And you're also, I think you're counting on a lot if you think DeMar DeRozan is going to give you the same type of year. Now, he can have a very good year, but he was just absolutely unbelievable for most of the season last year. I'm not sure that he's going to replicate what he did last year. So I would still put the next tier of teams as being Miami, Philly, and who am I missing?
Toronto?
No, the Nets. Okay. If that comes together. I mean, I think the Nets talent-wise have to be in that group. So I think if you're the Cavs, to me, I think the Mitchell trade puts them ahead of Atlanta. I think it puts them ahead of Toronto. I think it puts them ahead of the New York Knicks. I think it puts them ahead of the Atlanta Hawks. To me, they're better now than those teams. And I put them in that tier with Miami, Philly, and Brooklyn, which means I could see them finishing anywhere from third, probably down to sixth. I think that's the most likely landing spot for the Cavs. If things go really well, I could see them getting to three. And if things maybe don't break quite the way we hope, or that there's some injury, then I think potentially they could slip down to that sixth spot. But I think if this roster remains relatively healthy, I think they avoid the play-in game, and they're one of the six Eastern Conference playoff teams. That's where I see them going into in the regular season. And then I think you look at the playoffs. Where do you see their ceiling? How far do you think they could get if things broke right for them in the playoffs?
Okay, so you think they're going to end up at six? You don't think they're going to end up any higher than that?
No, I said three, between three and six. I think they're so you got Milwaukee and Boston. Those are the one and two. And then the next tier is Miami, Philly, Brooklyn, and the Cavs. And so throw those teams in whatever order you want or whatever order you think is right. And that tells me the Cavs are going to finish somewhere between three and six. I think you're probably right. They're probably in the 4-5 spot, because I think probably the ceiling maybe of those other three teams is a little bit higher. One of those three teams I would expect to have a good year. I don't think all three of them are going to reach out and max their potential, but I do think that one of them probably will, so which leaves the Cavs at 4 or 5. I think that's probably the most likely scenario in the regular season. So what do you think in the playoffs? How far can they get?
Well, okay, so if they get the 4 or 5, then that means they're probably drawing Miami in the second round. So that's what I'm going to say. Now, if they were to draw Philly in the second round, I think they could beat Philly, because Philly's proven that they're not battle tested in the playoffs. And I mean,
yeah,
you also have a guy named Doc Rivers as a coach. So we've seen, you know, I know he won one championship, but we've seen him. And his playoff abilities have not been good. So,
yeah, I think their ceiling, if things broke right in terms of the brackets or they got some injury luck or whatever it might be, I think their ceiling is conference finals. I think more likely what you're hoping this team does this year is you see each one of those individual players take a step forward, especially Garland and Mobley continue to improve and get better. You see where this team likes playing together and fits together. They start to figure out how those pieces are going to work out on the floor. And you advance to the second round. I think if you advance to the second round and you end up as a 4 or 5 seed this year with this team, I think then you're positioning yourself right where you want to be. Because I'll reiterate what I said the other night in the emergency pod. This team is going to be good with Donovan Mitchell. And if he's their best player or Darius ends up being their best player, this will be a good, fun team. But what you're really hoping for if you're the Cavs is that Evan Mobley becomes that alpha dog and the guy that is your best player. And now if Garland and Mitchell are in some order your second and third best player, now you're talking about a team that can contend for an NBA championship when you start talking about what Mobley and Allen bring on the defensive end of the floor and what Mitchell and Darius can do on the offensive side. And if you're saying Mobley's going to get to the point where he's going to be the best player on the team, then he's going to have to be pretty darn good on offense as well as what he brings to the table defensively. So I think the Cavs this year, to me, I would define success as you finish as one of the teams that avoids the play-in, that's in the playoffs, which puts you at somewhere between 3 and 6, as I said, hopefully higher rather than lower, and then you win a first-round series. And I think if you win a first-round series, get to the second round, who knows what happens. I think their ceiling is the conference finals. I can't see them going through and running the gauntlet, as you said, with they're just not as experienced as all those other teams when you start talking about Boston, Miami, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Brooklyn. You're talking about all teams that are made up of players that have multiple deep playoff runs and in some cases NBA championships under their belt. And so when you start talking about that, I just don't think the Cavs are ready for that without a little bit of seasoning. But if they drew the right matchup and this thing works out the way it potentially could, I could see them sneaking into the conference finals if they got a good second round matchup. But I think you're defining success by can they get out of the first round and can they be a team that avoids the play-in this year? I think if you do those two things, I think everybody associated with the team would feel pretty good about coming back in the 2023-24 season.
Yeah, I'm excited. Like I said, this is a project. We can't expect anyone that expects this team to go to the finals this year is unrealistic, in my opinion. They need a year to grow together. I'm really excited to see it. I think the legitimate hope is they get to that second round, and if they sneak into the conference finals, that would be awesome. And you know, maybe this will remind us of the 2016 Indians, and they'll even surprise us more. But I just don't see that happening. I just think a lot of things would have to break the right way for that to happen. So I think setting the bar for the second round of the playoffs, and if they get to the conference finals, I think that's a legitimately good goal for the team, and then they can build off it another year. Because what I don't want to happen is I don't want everyone to get like their hopes up and think they're going to get there that far, and then we're going to be super disappointed in the results when they only get like, say, heaven forbid they lose in the first round. Then we're going to act like the world's the coming to an end. But I think this is 3 years down the line. If that was the case, then I'd be more concerned. But I think this is a 2 to 3 year process. And we obviously want them to win now, but at the same time, we have to think about the future too. That's just my take on it.
I agree. I think it's a fun team. I think regardless of where they finish, I think the team is going to be really super fun to watch just because Garland and Mitchell are going to be so dynamic together on offense. There's going to be so many ways for them to be able to score and play off of each other. And then the continued development of Evan Mobley to see what he is going to become on both ends of the floor is super exciting. And I think the more that I went back and looked at this trade, and I think about, as I said on the emergency pod, my initial reaction was, ugh, it felt like we gave up way too much. But when you look back at it, and after having some time to reflect and really think about it, one of the key points is one that you made earlier, that those draft picks, it looks like you're giving up a lot when you think about, man, the Cavs are giving up 3 number one picks plus 2 pick swaps. But the reality is, because of the way these guys' contracts are structured and how many years the Cavs have them under team control, it seems really unlikely that they're going to completely fall off a cliff where those picks are going to be top 5 or top 10 picks. It just seems more likely that those picks are going to fall out of the lottery. And that's not to say that those picks don't have value and that some other team might end up, whether it's the Jazz or they end up trading those picks to somebody else, that somebody's not going to be able to find a quality player with one of those picks in the teens or 20s, because it happens. But I don't think the Cavs are going to end up giving up some huge, huge asset that ends up being multiple top five or top 10 picks. I just don't see that happening. So I think the value of the draft picks initially in my mind maybe was overrated. And then you look at the players we gave up. We talked about this before, but Markkanen was a pretty key part of last year's team. But I still think there was a lot of people that didn't feel like he really was the right fit for that three spot, even though it was fun to play 3 7-footers. I don't think a lot of people thought that that was really a viable long-term, hey, we can win with Markkanen playing the three for us. Agbaji obviously has potential. I was sad to see him go just because I would have liked to see what he could bring to the table. But the fact is he didn't contribute because he was at Kansas last year, so he didn't contribute to what the Cavs did last year. And then Sexton played like, what, 6 or 7 games before he went out last season. And so he wasn't really a part of what they did last year as well. So essentially, you gave up what we hope is going to be some late round, first round picks, and one guy who had any kind of meaningful role in what the Cavs were able to do last season. And in exchange for all that, you end up with a guy who, as we argued about last week, is top 20 player in the league, probably a borderline year in and year out guy who's going to get consideration for third team All-NBA. So one of the better players. And then I think for me, why I've really come around on it is when you're the Cavs, you just don't have that many opportunities to add a guy in the middle of his career, in the prime of his career, that's as good as Donovan Mitchell. Is Donovan Mitchell good enough by himself to make your team an NBA championship contender? I think you and I both agree, and most people would agree, that no, he's not that type of guy. But if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers, you just don't have very many opportunities to acquire a player in his prime that is one of the 20 best players in the league. And then you're adding that guy to a core of young players that you already have under contract, under team control for multiple years moving forward. And so I think that it was a move that, when it presented itself, it was a move that the Cavs should have made and had to make, because they just don't get that many opportunities. You could sit and wait for a guy who was a bigger star or was a better fit, but the reality is that those things don't break in your favor. And I don't mean just the Cavs, but any team. Those things just don't break in your favor very often. There are 30 other teams that are trying to do the same things that you're doing, acquire a superstar and build a team around that star or attain multiple stars. And so I think when you're the Cleveland Cavaliers and you're a small market, you have to strike when the opportunity presents itself. And I think in this case, even though it's not perfect, I do think that if the Cavs bet on the internal development of Garland and especially Evan Mobley, that it's a gamble that was well worth taking. And worst case scenario, it's going to produce the next 2 or 3 years of Cavs basketball is going to be fun to watch on the floor in the present moment. And it's also going to at the same time be fun trying to project what these players and this team could become. So for all those reasons, I've kind of come around on it. I'm happy to have Mitchell here with the Cavs, and I think it's going to be a fun ride while he's here. And I, as I've said multiple times, I think the ceiling is determined by where does Evan Mobley end up in his career. Is Mobley a top 10 player in the league, or is he a guy who offensively just remains an average player to maybe slightly above average and is playing unbelievable defense? If that's all he is, it's still going to be good for the Cavs. But if he can take that leap and become a top 10, top 5 player in the league, all of a sudden now you have a really, really nice supporting cast built around him, and then they can continue to do some tinkering around the edges of the roster. So that's kind of where I've landed on the trade. I don't know where you sort of were of that mindset before. I think it took me a little while. It took me a little while to come around on it.
Yeah, I'm there, Mike. I'm totally there. And you know what? I think, like you said, the big thing is, do they still have some movement and assets they can use? I didn't like hearing Simmons and Russillo talk about how they might float Love's contract, which I guess theoretically they could, but for what Love is, I mean, I don't know
what
that
you're getting back for. What are you getting back for him?
That's my point. I don't know. You heard that, right? You heard them talk about that. Did you?
I don't understand what you get that would be
Westbrook, and we're not want him. Like literally, no, what, I mean, what else?
What would you get that would be more valuable than what Kevin Love can bring to
the table?
The
thing is, what team is going to trade for Kevin Love that we can that's for a rental, because his contract's up after this year, a rental that's going to help them and also is going to give us something back that he's giving to us. I just don't foresee that happening. So I think they were speaking like they it was obviously an unplanned pod, so they didn't necessarily have all the numbers for the Cavs and stuff laid out. But there's just nothing. I don't think there's anything that you can get for him. So I think he's on the Cavs. Once again, Mike, he's not getting traded. I'm saying that now. I think last 6 years we've basically been doing
maybe.
will Love be on this roster on such and such date. I just don't see a team that's gonna give us something back for him that's gonna make a difference for us.
He's more valuable to the Cavs than anybody else.
Well, the only argument you can make is there's someone that's willing to part with a small forward that we could plug into the starting lineup, because that's really the only position that we need to, like, the rest of our starting lineup is locked up. Like, really, right? I mean, so
yes.
So it's the small forward position. So what small forwards is, I just don't see it. I don't see a team that's going to be willing to part with a small forward that's going to meet the contract threshold that Kevin Love's going to get. And also, once again, what team is going to take it? So I don't buy that. I think the Cavs are set. I don't think there's going to make – they could maybe tinker a little bit here and there. I think they have a trade exception of some sort, but it's a small one. So maybe they can get something like a rotation player. But once again, I mean, when I look at the roster, I legitimately think we have like 9 or 10 guys that are probably going to play like on any given night, right? I mean – When you're looking when you're looking at Chetty Osmond's probably your 11th guy or the 10th guy, right? I mean,
he might end up starting at some point.
I mean, with Okoro, yeah. I mean, that's a good point.
He may end up getting a look. I mean, he may not get a look initially, but
legitimately, when you look at our roster, I mean, we got 9, 10, 11 guys that are probably going to see the floor at like first hard.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, regular minutes, so I agree.
This team's going to be fun to watch, and they're going to be good. And I don't think they're a championship team, as we talked about, but I think that championship team, the framework of a championship team is in there. And to me, it hinges on Mobley and his development. So I'm excited. I think it's fun.
All right. So, Mike, we have to talk about one more thing very briefly.
Okay.
Predictions for the Browns. Next week we'll have our first Browns post game reaction. It's the Browns versus Baker. I mean, I'm preparing for the worst, Mike. I'm preparing for the worst, Mike. Jacoby Brissett looks terrible, and Baker Mayfield tears us a new one, and we lose in this game. Now the Panthers are favored by 2.5 in this game. For those bettors out there, as of currently standing, I'm just preparing for the worst. I mean, nothing that, as my dad said yesterday when I talked to him on the phone, nothing from the preseason screams we're prepared for the season at all. Like, they looked god awful. And, like, Brissett, I mean, Chubb and Hunt didn't play at all. Miles Garrett didn't play at all, I don't think. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where Stefanski hung in there year one. But then we got our butts kicked last year in the opener. So I don't know what you think, Mike.
Is Stefanski at all in the hot seat if it doesn't go well? I don't mean just this game, but I'm saying in these first 11 games, is this year just a complete, we're just throwing it away? And
you can't listen. I don't know where Stefanski, and I don't know we'll ever know until he's gone from the Browns. I don't know where Stefanski stays. Like, I know him and Baker had disagreements and whatnot. But something would have tells me that he didn't sign up for this clown show. Like, listen, I
He signed up to coach the Browns, though. So.
Yes, he did. Well, yes, but he didn't sign up. We weren't necessarily a team that was going to get a guy who's done allegedly all those things that he did. And oh, by the way, now the guy who has to answer all the questions about it isn't the owner, isn't the GM who made the move. It's the coach who is answering the questions. I mean, I don't know. I just think the bottom line is this, Mike. I think the Browns are losing on Sunday. I don't want them to lose. I want to be clear here. I just think something in my body is telling me that this is just going to go god-awful, like the worst-case scenario, because it is the Browns. It's the worst-case scenario thing's going to happen. And Baker is going to – like maybe he's not going to throw 5 touchdowns and like beat us 42-6 or something like that. But I just think that he's going to get the last laugh on this, and I hope I'm wrong, but I just – something in my body, and I know that you're not a Baker fan, but I just that's how I feel. I just feel like something it's going to go terribly wrong for us this weekend.
All right, here's what I'll say. I mean, as far as the result of the game this weekend, I guess I don't anticipate the Browns winning this game. I guess I feel like Carolina's probably going to take care of business, although I don't know that I'm confident if I'm a Panthers fan that I don't see Baker putting up 350 yards and 5 touchdowns, as you said. I think it's going to be a grinded out. I could see it being like 17-13 or, you know, 13-10, somewhere in that range, a low scoring game. But I think the longer range view is that you look at the Browns organization and it's continuously under construction and mismanaged. And you think back to a year or two ago, I don't even know, was that last summer or the summer before, where the Browns were kind of like the darling of the NFL? Like, they have so much talent and they're poised and ready to go, and the rest of the division is kind of falling off, and the Steelers are going to lose Roethlisberger, and who knows if Joe Burrow's good, and, you know, Lamar Jackson, can you win with the guy who runs, and the Ravens are just on their way out. And it just seems like, clearly with Pittsburgh and Baltimore, that those two teams just continue to build good football teams year in and year out because they have good organizations. The Bengals, we obviously can't say that about them, but it appears that they've caught lightning in a bottle with Burrow, who is a guy who has taken over that locker room and has got guys to believe. And so that's a big part of it. But you look at it even now where the Steelers are going to start Mitch Trubisky at quarterback, and there's still tons and tons of people out there saying that, well, Pittsburgh's going to finish ahead of the Browns. And as bad as Trubisky has been in his career, it just feels like, how can Pittsburgh not drop off the map when they lost their quarterback that's been, and again, don't get me wrong, Roethlisberger's been bad for the last couple of years, but still, you're talking about a franchise quarterback that had been there for 15 plus years. It seems like when a guy like that is ushered out the door, that you're going to have a hard time turning things around or keeping the ship going in the same direction. It just feels like Baltimore and Pittsburgh just retool every year, whereas the Browns, whatever promise a season holds, always inevitably goes up in flames. So I expect this season to go up in flames pretty quickly. And so let's start that off with a 16-13 loss to the Carolina Panthers.
You're going to put a score on it.
Yep, 16-13.
All right, well, I'm going to say the Browns are going to lose 23-13.
All right. So you got the Panthers. You're giving Baker one more touchdown than me.
Yeah.
All right, so let's end it there, man.
Let's end it there. It's midnight.
That's it. We're wrapping it up. So, again, kudos to the Cavs for getting Donovan Mitchell. Let's cross our fingers that the Browns season doesn't go up in smoke in game one. And we will see if Jacoby Brissett can exact some vengeance on Baker Mayfield. All right, thanks for checking out this NBA / very, very small portion NFL pod. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.